Live from the heart of the universe, this is the online edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights.
With tonight's guest, producer and founder of the Global Media Center for Social Impact, Sandra DeCastro Buffington.
Night sky. Look at the night sky.
And performance guest, DJ Celeste. I am Mark Legere, and now our host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
We have had many, many guests, decidedly, on the Life Changes Show, and many, many special ones, and we have guests who have experienced something or some things and share of their experiences and what they've learned and are potentially, they have products or tools services that can support others that are going through the same thing or similar things. We have guests that haven't experienced certain things but have studied certain subject matter or have worked with people in certain subject areas, and again, have books or courses, etc., to support. On a rare occasion, we have a guest who is experiencing the thing, and they support people by showing up. And they also support people, those even more special and rare ones, by sharing their story and having a way of sharing their story, which is impactful. And today we have one of those rare experiences. We got to meet our guest when she received the Gwen Luminary Award handed to her by Tess Cacciatore this past month. At the Yamashiro event. And afterwards, I heard Tess say to her, I look forward to your book. And so in speaking to our guests, I asked her, knowing full well she didn't have a book yet, I said, what would you title your book if you've already written it? And she said, off the top of her head, she said something like, letting go. And then she said something, the wilderness of the soul. And obviously this is a working title, or it might not even be the title at all, but the word wilderness captured my interest. And I thought, I wonder why she used that word. And I looked it up, and the dictionary said it means uncultivated, uninhabited, inhospitable. And similar words are uninhabited regions, badlands, jungle, desert, and wasteland, neglected areas, abandoned areas. And I thought, okay, it could be that, it could be that. Then I asked AI to go deeper with me. And the first thing that AI brought up was, in the Bible, there's the word wilderness used for both a physical place and a symbolic place. And in the physical place, it mentioned all of that. In the symbolic place, it said a time of testing and humility. It said a place for hearing God's voice. It said isolation and loneliness. It said preparation for ministry, for divine missions. And it said, new beginning. And I thought, wow, good on her. And in a sense, we're all going through a thing. We each have a thing. Hopefully, most of us, nothing like what Sandra is going to share today, our guest. And in a sense, we all go through periods of wilderness, testing and humility. And how how we go through it and what we do with how we go or with having gone through it. That's, I think, the most interesting part of the journeys. And I can't wait to, I think we're going to get a glimpse of what's on the other side of this wilderness with our guest, which is already an amazing thing, being that she's in it. I can't wait for this conversation.
You know, you made me think about the different ages that we have learned about, or that's taught in history, and all the way back to, what is it, the Pleistocene ages and the Middle Ages and the Iron Ages and the Dark Ages, and I'm thinking that this is now the Thing Ages.
Oh.
Because you're right, everybody's going through some thing.
Yeah.
And it always calls me back to that Ram Dass quote, we're all just walking each other home.
Interesting. That came up on some level in conversations with Sandra. She has shared so deeply, and I've been compelled to share with her as well. I feel like I really know her. I know we've all met her, but I feel like I really know her. And that's a very special thing. Because when we share from that place, right, Mark?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That raw, vulnerable transparency and authenticity is what's been lacking in our very divisive world. So this is a special conversation tonight.
And we've titled this episode, thanks to the inspiration of the words of our guest for her potential future book title, How to Let Go and Surrender to the Wilderness of the Soul. This is our episode 862. Our interview guest is so much that briefly, she's a co-producer of a film, Brainwashed. She's founder and president of Story Action, LLC, and founder and former director of Global Media Center for Social Impact. She's Sandra DeCastro Buffington. Welcome, Sandra, to the Life Changer Show.
Thank you so much, Filippo and Mark. It's really just an honor to be with you.
Oh my gosh. And it's been so special connecting with you and having you share like you have. We've laughed, we've literally cried, and I really don't know where to start.
One of the things I want to feel into is that you create a safe and sacred container for these conversations to take place. And I'm just so grateful to you because you're so present, and it allows me to be vulnerable and open. And that's pretty rare. I mean, not being vulnerable and open, that's not rare for me, but it's rare to find the people with whom I can share that. So thank you for being who you are.
Thank you. And thank you for being who you are and how you are. I don't know how you've come to be who you are. Actually, before we get into a piece of the meat of today's conversation, have you been conscientious, conscious, strong, forward-thinking all your life?
Wow, those are big words. I'm not sure how to answer that. I grew up the product of two very different cultures, and I grew up bilingual, actually multilingual. My mother from Brazil, my father from the United States. So I think growing up, navigating back and forth through more than one culture gives us a bit of perspective that we don't get when it's just one language and one culture. But it also brought a lot of questions for me, really questioning where I belonged and, you know, who I really was. And so I think that drove me to seek at a young age. I told you a little bit about going to the wilds when I was 19 years old, thinking, maybe I'd find answers to kind of my purpose and meaning in life. I went up to the northeast of Brazil to a very remote fishing village and thought I'd stay 2 months. I ended up staying 5 years, not just there and two other countries in remote places. So I think that really kind of forced a form of maturity, like really just to survive. I needed to pay attention. I needed to be curious. I needed to receive help and guidance to learn survival skills. So I'm not sure if that answers your question, but it's a little bit of my background.
You know, it in many ways it does. And actually, just to give a little bit more context, because I know this, when you say remote, you mean remote.
Yes.
Tell us, just give us a trailer on the remoteness.
Well, when the TV shows started coming along, I can't remember their names, but the
Like
survival,
survival. Yes,
survival type shows, I would sort of roll my eyes because I knew there were cameras and crews and that the people on those shows had an out. If somebody would get, severely injured, there would be someone to notice and they could be kind of extracted. Where I went, there was no out. And in one village, I mean, it took me 3 weeks to walk there. There was no escape. And I was young. I would dream about rescues, helicopters, payphone booths, and back in the day, fire trucks. I would have these recurrent dreams about these forms of rescue because they just didn't exist where I was. Northeast Brazil, and then later northeast of Lake Titicaca in Bolivia, and then finally in the very south of Argentina, right on the edge of the Patagonia. So those were the three areas.
Actually, it did shape a lot, I'm sure. One thing in particular that I'm reminded, you were saying it shaped your career when you watch somebody die, when she could have been rescued if there had been that ability.
Yes. Really, there were kind of two moments. When I was first in these very kind of wild areas, and it was the children in the village in northeast Brazil that taught me survival skills and how to carry water on my head, how to gather food from the jungle. And at night, I lived in a little mud hut. They would teach me their songs. And I had a notebook and I would write down the lyrics. I'd learn the songs and I learned the power of storytelling through these children. Because the songs, I started to realize the songs were immersing me in really the core of a culture. They taught me their love, their longing, their aspirations. There was such beauty and depth in it. And I realized how powerful storytelling was to transmit meaning. And at that time, the woman who lived across the path from me, her name was Dona Cecilia. She had 11 children and she had a 12th on the way. And very sadly, she died in childbirth. And it broke my heart because I realized then that her death was entirely preventable. She had no trained midwife, no transport to a hospital. She had no way to get health care. She didn't have contraception, so she couldn't space the births or limit them, and that broke my heart. And I knew that I'd spend the rest of my life trying to improve health and well-being in the world, uplifting humanity in some way. I didn't know how I'd do that. And that it would be at a global scale because I've been gifted with several languages. And that has guided my entire career.
So you actually did bring medical support to some villages, and then you were called to Hollywood to bring the stories. Or did you make that happen? Or obviously you did.
Well, I actually didn't. It's amazing to me. What I'm finding is that when I have a clear intention and that the intention has some integrity, that the world will bring those things into being. And I got a job offer out of left field to work here in Los Angeles. I've been living on the East Coast, working in 50 countries around the world, in the real world, on behalf of women and girls. And I got this invitation to work with the fake world of storytelling through Hollywood, writers and producers of TV and movies. And I remember thinking, I'm utterly unqualified for this job. Why do they want me? And I thought, but it's so interesting. It's not going to come around again. So I thought, I'm going to accept. And I told them, under one condition. And they said, what is that? And I said, I'll accept it if you let me take the work global. And there was a long pause. And I realized in that pause that they didn't know what I was talking about. And then they said to me, well, okay. And I thought, okay, it'll take me at least a year to learn how to do what I'm supposed to do. No, 6 weeks after moving to LA, I started traveling to the Middle East. I started getting these invitations. It just started to snowball. And I eventually opened an office in India to work with Bollywood the way I worked with Hollywood, and also an office in Nollywood to work, in Nigeria to work with these different creative capitals.
Wow, there are so many stories that I would love for you to share of those experiences. And in the time we have to jump forward. And I was thinking of your survival experience. And in a sense, you have like your story is a survivor experience of something that is right now present still from only, is it 10 months ago starting?
Yeah, I'm actually losing count, but I think you're right. I think it is 10 months. Yeah.
How much of that would you like to share with
So
us?
10 months ago, my home burned to the ground in the Palisades fires. And I lost everything I had, all my belongings. But less than a year before that, I lost my son, my adult son. So, in the span of a year, I lost one of the people that I loved most in the world. I've lost elders before, but never a child. And that I was already in deep grief from losing my son. And then 10 months later, my home burned to the ground. So I had 10 months in the sanctuary of my home to grieve. And I realized, for a while I was like, how can I lose these things? I lived in that home for 16 years, and everything of my son's, all the gifts he had given me, everything from childhood, everything that was meaningful was in that home, and it all disappeared. He disappeared, and then all of the evidence of him disappeared. And it was almost like being erased. And, I had this moment where I said to the universe, You took my son, you took my home, and you took all of my belongings. And then I went, but I'm still here. I'm still here. And I had this moment, I said, I'm free. There's this freedom. I had this moment of, I don't know how to describe it, but it was almost this joy that came. And I realized that this is what would happen at the moment of death, that all of the narratives that I'd played out in the life in this lifetime would go. The narrative of being a loving and then bereaved parent of my beautiful, amazing son. Then, the narrative of living in a home I loved, surrounded by nature on a cliff over the ocean, watching the red-tailed hawks circle around in the sky every single day. And that was my son's totem, the red-tailed hawk. And that I realized there was this joy in being free of all of the narratives of the lifetime. But as life would have it, it lasted just a moment, like long enough for me to have this experience. And then it's the big thud back into the body, into this life that I'm still living. And then I was faced with finding a way forward.
Place to live, clothes, is it like a new identity almost?
Well, in the beginning, it was basic survival. It's like, get out of the fire zone in time just to live. And then exactly, where am I going to go? Where am I going to stay? And in the beginning, it was moving around, to different friends' homes and eventually finding a place I could stay for a few months while I looked for some place to live, So there's, it's almost like it's surreal. There's a bit of, initially, this feeling of I've got to fix this, I've got to fix it somehow. I have to find safety somewhere until I realized that there was no way to fix it, that there was no way to force a solution, that I was on this path of being in shock and needing to somehow move to a new level, but I couldn't force that. And that I somehow had to allow and receive because there were a lot of people around offering help. There was so much kindness and so much community, like stepping up to help, because I wasn't alone. There were so many of us who lost our homes in those fires. And I had to find a way to say yes, to let people express their compassion, their kindness, their generosity. And yeah, it was getting a toothbrush. And I'm telling you, it was like basic clothing and just the basic things of daily life. So that was kind of the beginning. Oh my goodness. It was so confusing. I don't even know how to describe to you the state I was in. But some of the things I learned, like, I kept telling myself to stay curious. Because experiencing that much loss at once is, talk about wilderness. It was an unknown experience for me. I didn't even know what was going on inside of me. So I had to be curious and allow those feelings to be there, not try to push them away. And that meant, sometimes sobbing, and so I had these daily practices and I had to keep doing them, like meditation every morning and at night before I went to bed. Those were practices I did anyway, but not to give them up, keep doing them and allow them to be different than they were before. It was walking every day, like being in nature every single day, finding a new path, like a new place to walk, 5 miles a day, being in nature, breathing. Moving. I always had a writing practice. So it was setting an alarm for 10 minutes. I only had to write for 10 minutes, but doing it every day, letting anything come out that needed to come out, no matter how, dark and sad and all those things. And I think the main thing was not trying to do it alone. I had to live in community. I had to find certain communities, like other parents who had lost children, other people who had lost their homes, and to get together with them every week, be in community because I found, and I to this day find that that's where my healing is. It's in two places. It's in the silence of meditation. In communion with whatever you call it, spirit, God, nature, people have different way, love, peace, it can be the qualities, So it's in that stillness in communion. And it's also in community with others and not trying to do it alone.
Well, you also said that in community, the community that you have sought and found, that the emotions are so raw that
Yes.
all there's left is authenticity.
That makes me cry, Filippo. And it's true. It brings the tears, and I'm unapologetic about them. That's been happening, since all of these losses. And I think in those groups where there's kind of no room for small talk, and there's no judgment, and there's a way to just witness and accept each other because the unthinkable has happened. At the awards program at Tess Cacciatore's Luminary Awards program, I was seated at a table with a family of award winners and discovered in the first 5 minutes that they too had lost their adult son. And there we are, seated next to each other. And they founded, a program to help families who were experiencing the loss of a child. They've done extraordinary work. And, there we were. And the father of this young man who died looked at me and he said, "You're one who knows." And we just looked at each other. I said, "Yes." And we both knew. And, to anyone who's listening tonight, we all have losses. And I think most of us at some point in life have a loss that we, well, I'll speak for myself instead. I don't want to speak for other people, but a loss that I didn't feel I could survive. And I'm realizing that everybody kind of hits that wall at some point. And what we really need each other. We can extend this kindness, this compassion. What makes me cry today is kindness. Your presence, Filippo, your remembering of these conversations we've been having, and your ability to frame them so beautifully, almost like poetry, touches my heart. It really touches me deeply, and I hope that it can touch other people so they can feel the love that's available because love isn't always sweetness and light. It's a power. It is fierce. Love can be fierce. It can be a fierce witnessing of each other. And there's tremendous healing in that for me.
Sandra, I had a thank you for your words. They touch me. I had a moment when I was thinking of and looking into some of the things you've done, just some of the many things you've done, and the social change and social impact that has happened because of you in big movies and big TV series and things of that nature. And I think it almost doesn't seem fair. She's out there doing such a great work, and in the meantime, she's having to heal and go through all of this when she could be affecting people so positively in all of like what she was doing and more of it. And then I had a moment of, how do I know this isn't a greater impact than
Wow.
anything else?
Filippo, one of the things that is getting me through all of this grief is framing it in a way I'm like, okay, the universe is giving me these multiple losses in a very short period of time because my soul can take it. It's not why me. It's okay, I'm being polished in some way, and it's really rough sandpaper doing the polishing. And I realize that it's like being tested in a way. that I'm here to learn some very big lessons in this life. And, you know, these two losses wouldn't have occurred in such quick succession with everyone. Other people get different losses, you know. These are the ones that I'm meant to walk through. And so I'm not going to give up. I'm not going to stop the work I do either. You know, it's taken some juggling. You know, I'll tell you this. 2 months after my son died, I was scheduled to give a talk at a creativity conference in Brazil that drew 50,000 people. And after my son died, I said, there's no way. And I said to myself, you have permission to cancel everything. And I thought about it and I thought, well, you can stay home and cry and grieve, or you can fly to Brazil as planned and sob on the plane and then cry in the hotel room and then get on the stage and deliver a masterclass and then go back to the hotel and sob some more. And so, you know, that's what I chose to do. You should have seen what I packed. It was so bizarre. I brought shoes that didn't fit. I'm telling you, my brain was in grief. But I got there. I was able to, you know, manage these shoes that were too small. And, you know, I was able to get up there. And here's what I noticed. They had very bright lights on me, and I could only see the first two rows in the audience. And I started talking. I didn't talk about my loss at all, not once. The people in the first two rows cried through my entire talk. And afterwards, they came up and hugged me. In some way, on a frequency level, on some vibrational level, they were picking up on this tremendous grief. And they were feeling it, and they loved me through it. And then after the fires, 10 months later, I had agreed to teach empathy and storytelling at Harvard by Zoom. You know, I told them I wasn't going to fly there. I would do it by Zoom. And I had this class. I didn't even have a place to live. I was staying somewhere temporarily. I set up the computer on top of a suitcase that I placed on top of the bed, and I put a chair, and the lighting was terrible. But I was the same thing. I was like, I can cancel. They'll understand. You know, I don't even have a home. But I thought, or you can just show up and do your best and see what happens. And it went really, I mean, it went in a, I don't know, I can't even judge, except that it seemed to be very meaningful to the students, who, by the way, I fell in love with. The students are amazing. International group of brilliant young people. Very creative. And I'm so glad. And so this takes me to the final thing that has really been healing for me, is to be of service, even when I'm not at my best, not even half my best, be of service to other people. That's what is healing me, is showing up and being of service.
Sandra, not only the wrong size shoes, but you were sharing with me, you didn't even remember what you said.
That's true. It's so true. I couldn't prepare for that masterclass. I couldn't organize. I couldn't find a through line.
But you did.
I don't know if I did. I asked to be spoken through. I knew there was meaning inside of me that needed to be transmitted. And the ego wasn't functional enough to set it up, you know. I was so vulnerable. I was so vulnerable when I walked out there, and I thought, something's going to happen, but I don't know what it is. And I was spoken through it. It was like listening to myself as the words were coming out. It was all surprising to me. Yes, that's how it happened.
So here you are, and at this moment when we talked several times, wonderful conversations and very deep. And after learning so much about you, you said, Filippo, what I really want to say is, and then you talked about people. You talked about wanting to support people, even in this moment, through authenticity and through your sharing, and to make sure that your storytelling was impactful for them, which prompted me to say that, talk about social impact, you are living your social impact story.
Oh, thank you. I mean, you know, there's some, what I want to say to people is that there's a quote from Rumi that says, you have to keep breaking your heart over and over until it stays open. And that it doesn't matter how half-mast you think you are, if you're in the middle of something really difficult, you get to be exactly who you are and where you are. And then I hope that you find, like I have, safe, loving people who can be present to you, and that every single person on the planet is here for a reason, because each person has a unique gift to share. And I hope nobody here ever gives up, ever, that we carry on, because no matter, you know, how compromised we might feel in a given moment, those gifts are there. And sometimes the walls come down with these tremendous heartbreaks, and it allows those gifts to pour out in a new way. And I don't know what that's going to look like for me. I'm still in the transition, but here I am. I'm still here, and the soul still has more to express, and yours does too. And I just want to give everyone so much love. You've got my vote of confidence. You've got my power of love. And I hope you have people around you who see you the way Filippo does see his guests. And that together, we're in this together. We get to walk each other home, like Ram Dass says.
Mm. Mm. Beautiful. Thank you, Sandra. And I put quotes around something that you said earlier today, I think it was. You said, I'm still on a journey learning my soul and living from it. I thought, wow, I'd like to see that on a meme sometime. That and so many other of quotes from Sandra De Castro Buffington. What a pleasure to have been connecting with you all this time, to share your story with our audience and beyond. Can't wait for the book, the movie, whatever it's going to be. But actually, I don't want to put that on you. Thank you for showing up exactly as you have today.
Well, I appreciate your vote of confidence, and I vote for the book and the movie.
So, okay.
To be continued.
Wonderful. To be continued indeed. You know, actually, I know you're in the middle of major transitions, but would it be fair to give out, we didn't get a chance to chat about, but your movie, brainwashedmovie.com, right?
Yes.
So go on.
Well, Brainwashed, we made this film Brainwashed during the pandemic. It's about the way the camera is used to shoot women and men differently.
Oh.
It's about shot design. And we have clips from over 200 of the top films of all time, the top directors from all around the world over the last 100 years. And they all use the same shot design techniques that really objectify women and subjectify men, even if the woman is the lead, even if it's a women's empowerment film. And why is that? Because it's always been done that way. And we haven't seen what we're seeing. And so we break down five different elements of shot design, and then we show these examples from films that you, I'm sure you've seen most of them, because they really are, sort of the top films. And it's, lighting, camera, angles. There are a lot of different elements to it. And so many viewers, it's on Amazon Prime, it's on Apple TV Plus, it's on Vudu, it's on Canopy, it's on a bunch of different streaming platforms. But we've gotten so much feedback from viewers who say they will never see a film the same way again.
Social impact.
Brainwashed Sex Camera Power. That's the full name.
And there it is, brainwashedmovie.com. Find it on where movies are watched. You're brilliant. Thank you so much, Sandra. Look forward to sharing more sometime soon.
Thank you so much, Filippo.
All the best to you.
You too.
Wow, Mark, that's it tugs at my heartstrings, and yet I in a good way, I feel in such a good way. I'm empowered.
That was a lot of things.
Yeah.
She's navigated a lot of things, and to have the grace and the presence and the clarity and the intention, and the hint of joy that all her words are wrapped with. It's quite impressive.
To be able to, like I said at the beginning during the monologue, to share the story and to have a way of sharing it that really brings us in and supports everybody else. Like she's still there for everybody else in this process. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, really is inspiring. And boy, if the world, started to model that, what a beautiful place it would be.
That's what I said. She's living her social impact story for sure. And so with that, we have our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, this is David, and I need your advice once again. How can one express gratitude when one's finances are just enough to pay the bills? What are the advantages of gratitude under these circumstances?
Dear David, thank you for asking this very important question. So let's explore ways to stay open and grateful when life feels unfair or painful. Gratitude isn't about pretending everything is perfect. It's about noticing what still brings light, even when things are dark. My research and personal experiences have shown me that gratitude can reduce stress and anxiety by shifting focus from what's missing to what's present. I have discovered that by choosing gratitude and expressing thanks, that it helps me create a better emotional state of mind. By focusing on and being grateful for the good things in my life, I have been able to see that even hard times can contain hidden blessings or lessons. Practicing gratitude has given me inner strength when outer circumstances have been difficult. For example, when money is scarce, gratitude doesn't erase the pain of financial struggle, but it can help us not to be consumed by it. Instead of focusing on what is wrong, let's focus on the good things. Let's be grateful that we have loving families and friends that are comfortable to be with. I suggest you make a list of all of the good in your life right now, and I believe you will discover that you are blessed. Expressing gratitude in prayer can also be very helpful. Every night and morning, I say aloud, I am grateful for all the good in my life, and I thank the universe for even more good coming my way. I believe this simple statement invites more things for me to be grateful for. Practicing gratitude has increased my happiness, has reduced stress, and has helped me improve some relationships. It has also helped me focus on the positive aspects of life. Practicing gratitude has brought me many more things to be grateful for. And, dear David, if you need more reasons to express gratitude, you might want to do some research online. There are many great websites that could help you. PsychologyToday.com is an excellent one, and there are many other very good websites that will pop up if you search for Benefits of Gratitude. I look forward to hearing from you once you have been practicing gratitude, because I know it will make a wonderful difference in your life.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, please write her gratefully at askdorothy@lifechangesshow.com.
Brilliant. And what a perfect question after having Sandra DeCastro Buffington. There's an example. And for our performance segment, we are happy and delighted to have multi-instrumentalist, XR immersive experience designer, producer, music and sound director, composer, we could go on all day, and DJ Celeste Lear. Welcome, DJ Celeste, on the Life Changes Show.
Hello, gentlemen. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure having you on the show. You are involved in, so literally, the list of the different aspects, especially of music, but also immersive experiences and design, goes on and on. And I, as I was sharing with you when we spoke, like, I would say, what, more than half the things that you're doing today didn't exist even a few years ago?
It's pretty wild. I would say yes. And I've always been very fascinated in following some of the newest technological advancements as they roll along and see how they pertain to the arts and music.
So we're going to talk about engineering, I think, and the technological advancements in a little bit. But let's talk music. When did that enter your life?
Yes. Always deeply inspired by music, and started studying guitar. Asked my mother for an electric guitar when I was 13 years old. And my parents were gratefully very enthusiastic about pushing me into the arts and having various teachers for me. And so, yeah, from a young age, I have been practicing theory. I went into music theory and sound engineering in university and pursued that for many years, writing and releasing music and learning how to play a variety of instruments. So yes, the pursuit of music and going as deep as I possibly could in my music composition and production, and also engineering. It's been a life quest for me.
We talked about how impactful your music is, and I then learned something that made it even more impactful for me. You said that you started playing the guitar at 13. Interesting to me that you asked for an electric guitar. That's brilliant. At 13.
A red one. Like the fire sign I am.
What happened at 16, just 3 years later?
Yes, at 16, I was involved in a car accident where I lost my hearing in my right ear from a blow to the head and nerve damage that was never recovered. So I am 90% deaf in my right ear from a car accident.
Wow. And you have become a member of the deaf community because of this, right?
Yes. And I'm a member of the community and persevered despite through sound engineering training and music theory training.
I can't imagine, because here you are like on the edge of technology, and also you have this experience. Has one informed the other?
I would say yes. They say that other senses kind of kick in. I will also say that I am, as a DJ, I'm kind of a bass addict, and I love music with bass in it, because that's also all I can hear in my right ear. I can only pretty much feel low sub bass vibrations. And so I've been constantly seeking those really awesome, powerful low end frequencies in my own music production and also as a DJ. And just even out on a night on the town with my girlfriends going out dancing. So yeah, love that bass always.
Wow. Well, we're grateful because the music is it works so well. And then you add these other elements to it. So when did the visuals come in, or adding the technology ideas?
Well, yes, I suppose, like, I pursued music and I worked in the industry wearing many different hats, because in the music industry, sometimes you have to be as resourceful as possible to make ends meet. So over the years, yes, I've worked as a composer in sound design, music supervision, and then as a DJ. I was introduced to virtual reality actually in 2018 when I was living in the Bay Area, and I got to try composing music in virtual spaces and also creating art. And it was very opportune timing, because in 2019 I decided to purchase a PC, a gamer PC actually. If you study sound engineering, you most likely learn on a Macintosh, but I had to force myself to learn a PC and go down the rabbit hole of virtual reality, and I got a Oculus Rift S headset and started designing art and exploring the metaverse and spatial computing for composing and creating immersive concert experiences. And it was absolutely addictive, and it was such a phenomenal way to create experiences. I like to say, like, the sky's the limit, your creativity is the limit for creating, using tools like extended reality tools like virtual reality, augmented reality. And we just had a blast during the pandemic also, because we were all stuck at home, and thank goodness my crew and I had VR headsets, because we were partying our butts off in our living rooms.
Oh my God.
Which is also how I know Mark LaShore, through the extended reality community.
You know him in real life, but the extended reality community, right?
Yes, yeah. A couple of our friends we met first as avatars in virtual reality, and we became very dear friends. I have some lifelong friends that I've made since 2019, 2020.
That you actually met in a virtual reality?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's so wild.
To me.
Yeah, we philosophize often about how we're these points of consciousness that we're remote, but we still meet and we still talk in the same manner we would in real life, because the physics of reality are emulated in VR. So we have spatial sound, even some of the, like, the light and the way we view these dream worlds that we step into. It is it's so wild. We do philosophize about how we can still connect and have these deeply touching experiences, even virtually, as digital form.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, on our way to playing the first song, how did you meet Moses?
Okay, so I'm a multi-instrumentalist, and I have a recording studio in my home, and I produce, wasn't very prolific, so I produce a lot of tracks. And I was working on a track that I played guitar and bass, and I did the drum programming, and I said, I really want a male vocalist. And Moses, I'd heard his music on with the band 07, who was the act that made Sia famous. And I sent the skeleton track to his production team and said I'm a California-based music producer. I would be so honored to work with Moses. I hear his voice on this track. And they got back to me and they said that he listened to it and he really liked it. And so we had a meeting, and we discussed how the song would go, the direction, and we went back and forth with the vocals, where he would sing the parts, send me the tracks, I would comp them the way that I kind of heard them playing out. And the whole song actually took about 8 months, and then I was sending it out to various labels who were interested in the release. It was just so exciting. Moses has also worked with a group called Nightmares on Wax, and his solo work is phenomenal. It's so deep, and his lyrical content is just some of the most powerful and spiritually meaningful. So to me, it was one of the greatest honors of my career, and one of my most commercially accepted and best performing track of my career. And it's a down tempo track actually, so it's very chill. It's like a lounge piece.
It is very chill and very deep. Here is pre-recorded, of course. This is Celeste Lear's song Love Is Alive, and it features London-based soul singer Moses here on the Life Changes Show. Love is alive.
Yes, it is. I hope it is.
Well, it is. If you say so, it is. Celeste Lear, and featuring London soul singer Moses. Celeste, you have so many links where people could link up to you, your project, your music. Where is a good place to start?
Well, a great place to start is just under the name DJ Celeste, and then my last name's Lear, Lear, and there's all kinds of music on any of the digital streaming services or YouTube. I've got lots of different music videos, and I always love sharing.
Yes, we have lots of links actually for DJ Celeste Lear. Go to lifechangesshow.com and look up Celeste Lear, Lear, just like it sounds. Actually, speaking of just like it sounds, before we hear the second song, Lear, sounds really familiar.
Yes, it's a cool story and a really fascinating family history. So my grandfather was, his name is William P. Lear, and he was the inventor of the Learjet, which was the very first executive business jet.
Like, wow.
Yes, kind of amazing. So I came from a very innovative, enterprising, entrepreneurial, aviation and aerospace family.
Well, actually, we know, those of us who know the Learjet. He has how many patents?
He has over 150 patents and also many in sound technology, because I take after his lead, because he was obsessed over sound quality. And so one of his more famous inventions also was the 8-track cassette player and the cassette.
Oh, really?
Which is one of my personal favorites. And I also collect 8-track cassette players, so they're in my living room. I've got like 20 different ones in here.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's one of the more fascinating inventions. But he was also one of the developers of autopilot, was a big one, and lots of different kind of like automatic landing gear. He was one of the original founders of Motorola, and this is just absolutely legendary family. But a lot of skeletons in the closet with the family too. So it's not the genius was also mad and twisted genius at times. So that's a whole other story. A lot of family trauma left behind. My goodness. Yeah.
And you've had to work through everything. And I imagine a lot of it's in your music.
Yeah, if you believe in generational trauma, well, I might have gotten quite a bit of that to work through with some of my own music. Yeah, absolutely. I would say some of the best musicians that I've ever heard have that depth from the pain and like this crazy struggle, and it shines through. And I would also say, like, I was born with like a lot of ambition and drive, and I'm a bit of a workaholic. Like, I have a hard time just standing still. So I like a constant desire to, I'm better in my older age with my daily meditation practice now, but it was always this drive to create and express. And it was so innate. It just came from somewhere so, so driven and passionate about the process and the learning and the unfolding, and also the technology that helps in the unfolding.
Well, I was going to ask you where you draw most of your information, I mean, your inspiration, but is it like you have to do it?
Well, no, absolutely. I have fairly have a wasted moment. So I'm always out listening to the most amazing new artists that I find. I listen to a lot of podcasts also. The older I get, I'm on this really deep spiritual pursuits. So the older I get also, I would say that I land on the classical station and stay there more than I ever have before. So the levels of sophistication that I require in music are also getting higher and higher.
Well, in a way, this actually might inform this next piece.
Yeah, I would say it's a fairly sophisticated piece. Ephemeris is a newer release that was released this year on High Vibe Records, which I'm honored to be a part of. I've released a couple songs on that one. And,
nice.
Yeah.
Nice. So ephemeris, and you were defining it for me because I wasn't sure if it was like ephemeral or, and I liked what you were saying.
Yeah, ephemeris, it's a scientific term, and from my understanding, it's a sort of record of positions of celestial objects as they travel over time. And yeah, I loved that term. I heard it somewhere and I wrote it down, and I say, you know, one day I'm going to write a song called ephemeris. I have a whole list. Okay. I have a whole long list of names and topics that I want to write music after. And this also features a very prolific, very emotive cellist that I work with that is based in the Bay Area. I've lived in the Bay Area off and on for over a decade, and his name is Cello Joe. So he graces this track.
Oh, nice. Well, we're only going to get to hear about 4 minutes and 20 seconds in. It's a little bit longer, but we're going to get to hear about that much here on the show. And then the rest people can hear all over, right?
Wonderful. Yes. I've got lots of different pieces floating around.
Okay. And we'll give those links again. And of course, you can go to the Life Changes show and find them there. In the meantime, we're going to hear DJ Celeste Lear's piece Ephemeris here pre-recorded on the Life Changes show. Thank you. Celeste Lear. Now you know why her music's been featured on shows like So You Think You Could Dance and is connected with Imogene Heap and, oh my gosh, what, hundreds of placements in films and television?
Well, yes, I'm very prolific, as I mentioned. I produced a lot of music over the years, and I've been at this since my early 20s.
Wow.
Yes.
Well, so, more power to you. And I feel like there's, I don't know how you've done it for the last 25 years or so, but I feel like there's at least another 25. And who knows what technology you're going to be using?
Very wild, but I'm happy also to share some of the work I'm doing in the immersive technology sphere. And my newly branded company is called Boutique XR.
Boutique XR. And what are we going to get to enjoy there?
Well, just kind of a smattering of the different projects that I've also worked on this last number of years to actually pull in money. Because as many people know, if you have musician friends, it is definitely a challenge to make money in the music industry, unless you're like in the top tiers, maybe the top 15% of musicians. It is a struggle. The song placements I used to have even 5 or 10 years ago, the royalty rates were much, much better. So it has definitely been more challenging. So finding ways to have money coming in has definitely been an objective and goal, and having my, the music also still my passion for music align with that, and finding pathways, for a career has been taking precedent in this kind of transition, working with immersive tech and also producing art for other projects, art and music for other projects, including UN projects, actually. That's a whole other story. But there is information on that on the Boutique XR website.
That would be boutiquexr.io?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And again, we have links at the Life Changes Show page for Celeste Lear, L-E-A-R, and also links to her music and her Instagram and all of that stuff. For find her, follow her, and appreciate her offerings. Thank you so much for sharing as you have with us, Celeste.
Yes, awesome to also share this harvest supermoon with you.
Oh, yes.
Yes, everybody go outside and look up.
It's huge and full, absolutely. And you know what? I look forward to experiencing you live. I understand you put on quite a show.
I do love performing, and I got to perform this last weekend at the Earthstock
Ego, oh, nice.
Summit, yes, in Santa Monica on Saturday night for the community of conscious green builders and the conscious community working around sustainability.
Yes.
And that's a wonderful community to check out also.
Well, great. And we have had many people from that community on the show. So, and I'm sure we'll have more. In the meantime, delighted to have finally connected with you and had you on the show to share with our audience, Celeste.
You too. Amazing. So. Thank you so much, Filippo and Mark.
Thank you, Celeste. A big thank you to our performance guest, Celeste Lear. And another big thank you to our interview guest, Sandra DeCastro Buffington. And with that is our show. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our executive producer and co-host, Mark Lejeune, I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you that as your life changes, like ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at The Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.